another politician comes to me one day. I was out to lunch, and he sees me out, and he goes, you know, you're making a lot of noise. And he said, you know, we're all friends with each other, the cops, the prosecutors, we're all friends with each other. And I looked at him, and I said, okay. I said, so what are you trying to say? He goes, no, nothing. I'm just not saying. I said, by the way, did you buy your girlfriend a gift for her birthday? And he looked at me, and he goes, I don't have a girlfriend. I'm married. I said, oh, you sure? And he knew right away I had caught him, because I knew he was screwing this. He was screwing this chick. And at that point, he realized that I'm not the fucking guy that he thought I was.
You said you never wore jeans in your
life? Never. Not even as a kid.
Really?
Nope. I used to go to school in silk shirts and silk scarves and leather jackets.
And now you're running for Congress.
Yep.
You have an interesting story. Where do we start? How'd you grow up? What was your family like?
My father was, he owned restaurants and parking lots on the Atlantic City Boardwalk. He put me to work at age 12 and learned how to hustle there.
Where were your parents from?
My father came from Scotland, and same thing. You know, he came here. I came to this country when I was 3.
Oh, really?
Yep. I was born in Scotland.
Wow. And you moved to Vegas at some point in your life?
So I started doing business in Vegas when I was 19. Fell in love with the town. I said, I got to have a home here. And that was it. And then when everything was done with my legal shit, I said to my wife, I said, I'm done. Not going back to Jersey again. I'm going right to Vegas. And I walked out of prison and landed in Vegas.
So you have a complicated story. But tell me about some of the trouble you got into.
Well, life was great, right? I got very successful very early on. And then when I was 24 years old, I was wrongfully accused of arson, making terroristic threats, animal cruelty, and weapons charges. And I was facing 40 years in a state and federal prison. And I wasn't even there when it happened, the whole thing. I had a psycho ex-girlfriend who I spoiled rotten and gave her everything. And when I decided to cut her off and I said no more, she wanted me to buy her a Bentley. She wanted me to buy her father a house. I said, not happening. I told my bodyguard, my driver, I said, I'm going to send her down to Alabama, and I want you to pack up everything that's hers and dump it on her front lawn in Alabama. So I put her on a plane, sent her down there, and my driver and bodyguard drove down there, 3 o'clock in the morning, dumped everything. And I said, but make sure you pick up my car, because I had bought her 2 cars. I bought her a Cayenne Turbo and also her father a pickup truck. And they go down there, and she lives in a town of 800 people. There's no cell service. So they call me when they have cell service, and like, we did what you asked, but there's no car. Car's missing. So now I got to call this woman again. So I call her up, and she says to me, she goes, I'm going to teach you a lesson like you've never heard, you know, never learned before. I'm like, I hung up on her. I said, I'll just sue you for the car. A week later, I get a restraining order that says, I threatened to bash her dog's head in. I'm sorry, I bashed her dog's head in. I threatened to shoot her and like a few other things. So I call my lawyer. My lawyer's in Jersey, and he's a big-time mob attorney. And he goes, you're not going to Alabama. He goes, fuck this shit. He goes, it's a redneck bullshit charge. He goes, it's a temporary restraining order. It'll go away, right? So he goes, I'll hire your lawyer down there and make it go away. Well, we hire this Mickey Mouse lawyer down in Alabama, and he calls me up, and he says, they want to charge you with arson. I said, arson? What the fuck did I burn? And he says, supposedly her house. I said, the house that I've been paying for 18 months, her dad's house, because she lived with me. I had her gotten her apartment on the beach, and she was living in Jersey. And he goes, yeah. I said, so I didn't believe him. So I called him back, and I said, are you fucking with me? He goes, no. Seriously, they're going to charge you with arson and all these other charges, and you need to surrender. I said, I wasn't even in Alabama. When the fuck did this happen? So he calls me up, and he goes, it happened at 5:30 in the morning at this time. It was like 5:14 or 5:30, whatever the fuck it was. On this date. So I called him back and I said, I got pulled over at 7 o'clock in the morning on the Atlantic City Expressway and I got a ticket. I said, 7 o'clock in the morning is 6:30. Oh, sorry, is 6 o'clock in the morning, Alabama time. How the hell can I be burning a house and then be in New Jersey a half hour later? Not possible. I said, even if the Concorde existed, I couldn't do that, right? And I said, at 9 o'clock in the morning, I walked in and I bought a brand new BMW on camera at a dealership with my driver and my bodyguard. So how the hell did I burn a house down? He goes, in the state of Alabama, it takes an accusation. You're going to have to surrender, and then we'll deal with it. And we'll show them all this stuff. And I said, what's the deal? He goes, you got to come down and surrender. I said, all right. So we made a deal. I was going to go down and surrender. Well, they didn't live up to the deal. A couple hours later, I got a knock on the door. I have state police. I got sheriff. I got county. I got everybody on my front door with an extradition warrant to take me down to Alabama for arson. Picked me up, put me in county jail for 2 weeks. And then I waived my extradition. I got arrested in a three-piece suit July 10th, in the middle of July, right? They have me cuffed and shackled in the back of a paddy wagon for 7 days. I stopped at every jail across the East Coast. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner was McDonald's that they fed me in the back of this van. No AC. I get down to Alabama at 4 o'clock in the morning. They put me in a jail cell. First, they blast you with ice-cold water in like with a hose. And they take me to court, and it seems like the entire town's there. And I asked this lawyer who I'd never met before, and I said, what's this? And he goes, they're here for you. And he throws a paper on the thing, and I look like John Gotti. I had a slicked hair. You know, I'm in a three-piece suit on the front page of the newspaper, and I'm accused of arson. I'm like, oh, great. So he goes, I'll have you out of here in 5 minutes. Oh, well, that's a relief, right? Because now my family's – I can call my family and tell them to come down because my family had no clue where I was at this point because when they extradite you, they don't tell anybody where you're at, when you're going to get there. And the prosecutor stands up and he says, I want no bail for this guy. This guy's a flight risk because he's got money and he's got access to a jet and he's got access to this and that and that. And this judge, when you look him up, this judge reminds you of the judge in the movie My Cousin Vinny. Remember the judge?
I do.
That's what he looks like, okay? And this judge looks at me and he says, I agree, no bail. I'm 24 years old. I look at my lawyer, what the fuck's that mean, no bail? He goes, well, you're stuck here till trial. I said, when's trial? He goes, it could be, 11 months to a year. I said, you told me you'd be having me out of here in 5 minutes. I didn't do this. I have proof I wasn't even in this town. And you're now telling me I could sit here for a year? I said, I got a business. I got a daughter. I got a life. You got to get me the fuck out of here. And this guy just brushed me off like it was no big deal. I said, you got to do something. So they take me to the jail. And because I have no bail, now I'm considered high risk. So they put me in maximum security part of the jail. So I had six guys in my cell that were all on for capital murder charges. I've never been in trouble in my life. So now I'm in there. I'm in there 4 months, no bail. And I see this the news is on, and there's this lawyer who just won the biggest case in American history, and he happens to be Johnny Cochran's partner, and he has an office in Alabama too. There's a second office, right? And everybody's like, that's if you have money, that's the guy you got to hire. I ran right to the payphone, called my father. I said, look this guy up, right? And he called the guy up. Next thing you know, I got four lawyers coming to see me the next day, and the guy looks at me and he goes, Bobby, people don't like people that look like you down here. And he goes, this is a good old boys club. And he goes, you don't fit in. Back then I had slicked hair. I'm young. And he goes, you hire me. I guarantee you one thing. You go home a free man. He goes, but I don't know if I can get you bail. I said, okay. So I told my dad, pay the guy. I said, I'll make the money back. But you pay him. We go to court. And he gets me bail. We literally got the prosecutor to say exactly what we wanted, right? And he says, the judge says, $1 million bail. My lawyer stands up, done, right? So we post the bond, and they send me back to jail. And I'm supposed to be released in a couple hours. I'm not released. Next thing you know, they're like, well, it's going to take a little bit longer. Well, maybe tomorrow you get released. What are you talking about? Well, tomorrow morning is the day before Thanksgiving Eve. I get a 6 o'clock in the morning, they yell my name and like, come on out, take your stuff, you're leaving. I get to the front of the jail, and there's two U.S. Marshals there. U.S. Marshals hand me a detainer and said, now you're being detained by the federal government and you're being charged with interstate commerce. The U.S. attorney was related to the prosecutor on my state case, and that guy must have called and said, this guy can't leave the state. You need to detain him. So now the feds detained me. So they picked me up on the day before Thanksgiving, and they take me to Montgomery, Alabama. I'm getting there. Nobody knows where I'm at. Now I got to fight the state and the feds. The feds come to me a month later or so, and they say, if you plead guilty, you go away for 5 years, and we want you to testify against this person, and that person. And I said, well, what's door number two? Well, you go to trial, you lose, and you go away for 40 years, and you have a state case and a federal case, and we have a 97% conviction rate. I said, okay. I went back to my jail cell. I told my lawyers, I'm going to fucking trial. And we went to trial on the state charges, and I was found not guilty by a jury on all counts. And I walked away a free man, and the feds had to dismiss their indictments. And my lawyers, as I was walking to my car, my lawyer says to me, he goes, Bobby, congratulations. You won, but you lost. I said, explain that to me. He goes, nobody walks away from a federal indictment. He goes, if you walked away from a federal indictment, he goes, you're young, you have money, and you're flashy. He goes, they're going to come knocking again. He goes, watch your back. And those words from that day haunt me every day. And I went on, I built my business, and life was good. I ended up in Forbes for being the dealer for the most expensive car. My clients were celebrities, ball players. I threw parties and, you know, all
you,
types
you
of
had
things.
An exotic car.
Yeah, I had an exotic car dealership.
Yeah.
My business was export. My main business was wholesale. I exported exotic cars all over the world. I would buy cars from dealers all across the nation. So like on a daily basis, like my nickname was Bobby Four Phones because I had four phones going at all at one time.
You had four phones today when you pulled in.
Yes. So somebody would call, like Beverly Hills would call me up and say, I got a Murcielago, I'm trading it. What do you want to pay me for it? A guy in Miami would call me for a car. Like I'd be buying cars all day long. Imagine stockbrokers, but that's what I did with cars. And I'd be just putting them in ships and shipping them to Russia, China, Middle East, wherever. I made a lot of money and I didn't have to deal with the public. And then eventually I ended up with a franchise. So I got stuck with a retail dealership. I didn't want it. I hated dealing with the public. So, I had a wholesale business and a retail spot and everything's going good. And, in 2013, we lost our son, my wife and I. Now, obviously I got married to my wife right after I left my last case. So 2013, March, we lose our son, and I stepped away from my business, and I brought my wife out to Vegas because while we were going, you know, when grief is tough. Some people, I'm a guy that works through it.
Especially with a child.
Yep. When my son died at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, I was at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. That's how I cope.
How old was your son?
He was just born.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
That's how I cope. I just work. But my wife, she took it hard. She literally would be at the grave every day, just, you know, mourning. So I brought her out to Vegas. I just, change of scenery does good, right? While I was gone, somebody I trusted, I said to him, look, you can run the retail spot. The wholesale business I can run from Vegas. You run the retail spot. You can get 50% of everything. Just make sure just things move smoothly. While I was gone, he started a side business that nobody knew about. And what he was doing was he was borrowing money from people to lend to people that couldn't go to banks. And what he was doing was let's just say you need $100,000 or you need money, but you can't go to the bank. So you have a $100,000 car. He'd give you $60,000 and at 29% interest. And if you didn't pay it off in 90 days, the car was supposed to come to my dealership and be sold. But in order to lend you the 60 grand, he borrowed money from, let's just say, ABC, right? So cars are coming to my dealership. My employees are selling these cars. And 11 months later, I go back and my title clerk says to me, she goes, we have a problem. We're missing titles for cars. What cars? Well, all the cars that came from this guy, we get one title here. We get two here. We don't get one. So she goes, it's all wishy-washy. So I'm like, okay, let me see what's going on. I get a phone call that day. And the guy says, he goes, is this Maserati still there? I said, no, we sold the Maserati like 3 months ago. I'm looking at the ledger now. He goes, no, I was told by such and such that the car was still at your dealership. I said, no, why would the car? I'm telling you, I own the dealership. We sold the car months ago. About 5 minutes later, I got a phone call from the person I trusted. And he calls. He goes, can you put this Maserati back on your website? Why would I put it back on my website? He goes, just put it back. I'll explain later. And that's when it clicked. The guy that called me was the investor that gave him money to lend to somebody. The Maserati was supposed to be an asset that was supposed to secure the loan, but the car came to my dealership. We sold it because the cars, when they came to our dealership and they were sold, that meant that the person that took the loan lost all rights to it. So that's why our car was there to be sold. And it clicked that this guy was robbing Peter to pay Paul. Backstory. This guy, he owned one of the biggest exotic car dealerships in the world at one point. And he used to buy 30, 40 cars a month from me. He was a good customer of mine. But he got busted for transporting Quaaludes in the back of exotic cars from L.A. out to the Hamptons. And he got pulled into this giant Quaalude ring and was arrested by the feds. But everybody went to prison. He never did. I never paid attention to that until that moment. And I realized that this guy snitched on everybody. And now he had to try to maintain his lifestyle. And he was robbing Peter to pay Paul. So now we're selling cars and giving him the money. We're expecting titles. What he's doing is he'll give me one title. He won't give me one because he has to pay back the investor. Sometimes, you know, he's not paying back the investor and he's just floating it. Well, it turns out a lot of people paid off their loans too and they want their cars back. So when I confronted him, I should have never confronted him. I should have just picked up the phone and called the FBI. I didn't do that because of my hatred for the FBI, because everything I went through. When I confronted him, he really knew that like he was cornered. And all of a sudden he tells his investors, Bobby took your money. He tells the people that took out loans, he sold your car. He wasn't even supposed to sell your cars. And it, within 24 hours, it was like a fire. Somebody just lit a fire. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, you owe me money. I'm like, I don't even know who you are. I'm like, and I'm going through everything. I'm like, okay, I owe money to this. And I took care of the money that I owed. But I said, all these people that are out there, they're not my customers. I said, you took out a loan from him in another state. Your car ended up on my dealership through this person. I have to deal with him directly. And I said, and then my customers that actually bought cars were owed titles. I'm like, now that's the issue I have. I have to buy those cars back. So my lawyer said, you got to clean up this mess. So I cleaned up about a $3.6 million mess. I thought I'm done. Well, I got a phone call from my bank, who I did a lot of business with. And the bank, we wrote loans because we were considered a new car dealer. So somebody comes in, they want to buy a car and they want to finance it. We wrote the loan and the bank is the one that funded us. Bank calls us and says, you owe us $800,000 worth of titles. I'm like, well, I don't have the $800,000 worth of titles. I'm going to need them. I need a 30-day extension. And the bank says, no, we're cutting you off. When they cut me off, they cut me off where I can no longer write loans. We can no longer have a floor plan. They cut my floor planning off too. And in the state of New Jersey, when you're out of trust, they shut your dealership down the next day. They also called the state, and the state suspended my license the next day. So now I'm out of business. I could have paid the $800,000 off because I had assets that were cars that were owned under the dealership name that weren't floor planned. But when they suspend my license, I can't transfer ownership of those cars. So those cars are like dead weight. It's like a paperweight. If I have a $400,000 car that I can't transfer title, it's useless. And my lawyers are like, look, so unsuspend his license. He can sell some of these cars. The bank's made whole. The rest of the people, they're not his responsibility. They're this. Nobody wants to listen to me. No, at this point, I'm the guy because I'm the guy that's appearing on reality TV shows. I'm the guy that's driving around in a Rolls Royce with a bodyguard and a $6,000 Brioni suit. So I'm the flashy guy. And I make for a great headline. This guy doesn't make sense. And so my lawyers tell me the FBI's circling. We suspect that they're going to come after you. So my lawyers go to the FBI and say, before you do anything, we can explain everything. He wasn't even here for most of the stuff that happened. He owes this. He legit, but he can make it whole. FBI wants no part of it. One of my lawyers says to me, he goes, I have a solution to your problems. I said, okay, what is it? He says, meet me in this office in Hoboken. Meet him in an office at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's two guys sitting at a table. And the one guy says, he goes, if you hand him $100,000, when you get charged and your case comes in my courtroom, I'll make sure that you get bail, and in 6 months, I'll dismiss your indictment. That man was a judge. And I looked at him, and I looked at both, and I looked at my lawyer, and I said, I'll get back to you. I don't know how much cash I have. I walked out. I grabbed my lawyer, threw him up against the 911 Turbo that was parked there. And I said, I don't know if I'm being set up. I said, because if I give this guy the $100,000 and I'm being set up, I'm going to prison for bribing a judge and along with everything else. And I said, if I don't give him guy $100,000, I said, if I do get charged and I go into his courtroom, he's going to be pissed. I said, I'm screwed either which way. So I called one of my old lawyers up and I said, I need to talk to you. And I broke down what happened. And he says, he meets me in a parking garage in Newark. It was like 5:30 in the evening, and he says to me, he goes, your life just ended today. He goes, do you know any non-extradition countries? Not like everything's like, I mean, it's like a ton of bricks falling on you. I said, what do you mean non-extradition country? He goes, your life just ended. He goes, you have no family. He goes, you have no homes, no cars, no business, no nothing. He goes, you need to get the fuck out of this country and let me handle this. He goes, because let me break it down for you. He goes, they're going to arrest you at 6 o'clock in the morning. They're going to pull you out of your house in your underwear. He goes, they're going to put you in custody. He goes, this is a white collar case. He goes, they're going to freeze your assets. He goes, now you're going to have no bail. Who's going to take care of your wife and kids while you're in jail? He goes, you're going to be in there for 18 months. And in 18 months, they're going to come to you and say, you're facing 20 years in prison, but we'll make you a deal of 10 years. He goes, and you're going to have to plead guilty because you have no money to defend yourself. So some public defender is going to shove that deal down your throat. He says, is that what you want? I said, no. He goes, well, get the fuck out. He goes, I'm not telling you this as a lawyer. I'm telling you this as a friend. I said, where the fuck do I go? He goes, I don't know. Go someplace that's non-extradition. And I said, I got a family. He goes, you have to make sure that nobody knows what you're doing. And just imagine your life just ended, right? And you're like, what am I doing here? Like, you know, so.
You were how old at this time?
I'm at that point 32 years old, right? I mean, at that point, you know, my biggest, I'm like, is this it? That's where my life peaked. Like, I had all this success and my life is over at age 32. Like, you think of everything, like, I'm going to lose everything. And now I'm facing decades in prison for something that could have been resolved. And now I'm being railroaded. My reputation is tarnished. Everything is just destroyed, right? My ex-wife won't let me see my daughter, all right, my oldest daughter, because of all the headlines. It's not like I killed anybody. It's a business thing, right? So I go home. What the FBI didn't know was
And you weren't guilty of anything in both of these cases with the girlfriend Alabama?
No, I owed the bank $800,000. I owed that 100%. I admit that I owed the bank money, but I could have paid it. But they froze my assets, so I can't pay it. If they would have
And you did get swindled by this
part. Yeah, so the guy I got swindled by, and that guy was and I'm going to get to that what he's done. So he's been charged three times with crimes like this, similar, right? Mm-hmm. He seems to get away because he snitches on everybody. He put me in a position where I owed money. I left myself open for it. It happened on my watch. It should have never happened. When my son died, I let my guard down. And at that point, you know, normally I'd be protected. I wasn't protected. And while that happened, yes, on my watch, he allowed this to happen. If I was there, this would have never happened. But I legitimately stated from day one, I said, I owe the bank money. I'm not denying that. But all these other people that are claiming I owe them money, I don't own that money because there's a reason why those people owe it. And there's a story, but nobody wants to talk about that story, and you'll find out why. So I get home. So the FBI doesn't know that I have two homes right next door to each other. They only know about one home. So I pull into the one driveway. The FBI parks right next to me, and they're watching me. And I go inside the house, and I walk out the backyard of one house into the backyard of the other house, and in the house I go. The other house was a guest house, and they thought I lived in the guest house. I open my safe, and I take $80,000 out. That's all I had left at that point because everything else is gone. I took $10,000, and I gave $70,000 to my wife, and I said, if you love me, you won't ask me questions. I said, do you love me? And she said, yes. I said, do you trust me? She says, yes. I said, well, then you can't ask me what I'm doing or where I'm going or anything. And now we've got two kids together at this point, right? So she breaks down. And my wife is one of those old, you know, she's like those Italian women. She, you know, she's a Jersey Italian woman, right? She knows not to ask your husband questions. She, like, if I don't come home, she's never going to ask me, why is he not home? Like, that's the relationship we always had. And she's never asked how I earned my money, what I did. I mean, she knew what I was doing, but, like, you know, she never asked. So she's a Jersey girl through and through. And she broke down crying. And I said, at the right time, you're going to know what to do. And she goes, well, when's that right time? I said, I can't tell you. I said, but this is your $70,000 right now. This is going to have to help you get through what you have to get through. I had it in the other house. I had a Yukon sitting in the driveway, in the garage. And I used to own the 1989 Batmobile, you know, the Michael Keaton car.
Yeah.
And I had that and a Yukon parked in there. And I ended up getting in that thing, and I drove to Canada, to Toronto. I walked into the airport, and I looked Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Emirates or Etihad. And I picked up the phone, and I called two people. I called somebody in Qatar. I called somebody in Dubai. And I said, look, I'm going through this, and I'm going to be coming out your way. And the guy in Dubai says to me, he goes, get on a plane. I'll see you when you get here. And I went and bought a ticket to for Etihad Airlines, landed in Abu Dhabi, and I drove straight to Dubai in a taxi. And the guy I knew met me, and he handed me a cell phone. And I picked up the phone. I called friends in London. And my friends in London said, he goes, you just became the FBI's most wanted fugitive. He goes, they raided your house. He goes, but if they raided the wrong house, they didn't know that your wife and kids were in the house next door. And he goes, your wife watched the whole raid. And he goes, watch the news. You're all over the internet. I became the FBI's most wanted fugitive for $865,000 that day, right? The FBI stated that I owed $1.6 million to the bank and I swindled dozens of people. Well, even the bank, when I, you know, when you see, fast forward the story, you'll find out bank was like, no, it's not 1.6 million, it's 800 grand. But the problem is the FBI, they like to pad everything. They don't actually do homework. They just, the FBI prints a register and says, these are all the cars sold. These are all potential victims, right? So I'm going to go through the next 5 years. Over the next 5 years, I'm the FBI's most wanted fugitive. At this point, I managed to get my family out of America into Dubai, and I'm a fugitive from justice. I'm wanted by Interpol. During a five-year period, I tried to surrender 27 times to the FBI. They wouldn't want me. My attorneys have emails where we reached out to the U.S. attorney and said, he's willing to surrender, right? And the U.S. attorney's response was, unless he's willing to plead guilty, not interested in talking about a surrender. They didn't want me to have a day in court. Like, they, no trial, nothing. They just wanted me to plead guilty. That's what the U.S. attorney's done. After 27 attempts of surrender, I go on Fox News. At this point, I'm an illegal immigrant living in Dubai. I've overstayed my visa. I've overstopped. I mean, like, at this point, I, you know, even if I wanted to leave, I couldn't leave because I owed so much in fees for overstaying the visa. So I said to my lawyer, I said, look, I'm not asking for a deal. I'm not asking for anything. I'm just saying I want to come home, but I need a new passport. My passport's expired. The U.S. Embassy is the only one that can give me a new passport. I need you to help me. I go on Fox News and I do a 42-minute long interview. If you watch the Fox News interview, they took a 42-minute long interview and chopped it up into 60 seconds and put my words together. And it made it seem like I'm asking the feds to write me a check to come home. I'm like, that's not what I'm asking for. So I took the 42-minute long interview and I put it up on YouTube myself. And I said, here's the actual interview. This is what I said. This is what Fox News says. Nothing happens. My lawyers, you know, they won't accept my surrender. My lawyers call up the AG, call up everybody. Finally, I storm into an embassy and I said, I refuse to leave. And I said, I'm not leaving here. After 6 hours of me being at the embassy, they finally said, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm a fugitive from justice, first off. I'm standing on U.S. soil. You're FBI agents. Arrest me and take me the fuck home. Well, you don't have a passport. I said, there's a fucking passport window right there. Like, do I have, like, I'm a wise ass, okay? And I just say it how it is. I'm like, there's a fucking passport window. I'm in an embassy. Do I have to do your fucking job for you? And they're like, you got to pay. I'm not paying. I'm wanted. Standing on a U.S. soil, and you're an FBI agent. I said, what would happen if you caught somebody on the streets and you arrested them? Are you going to tell them that he has to pay to go home? I said, the U.S. brings people home all day long. Then the FBI agent, he must have been a rookie, and he says, well, you don't have a passport picture. I said, figure it out. There's a white wall. You have a cell phone. You can't do that yourself. I said, you're taking me home. You can't figure out how to take a fugitive home. So then they hand me off to Abu Dhabi police. Abu Dhabi police says, well, you're not wanted in our country. You didn't commit any crimes here. We're going to hand you off to Interpol. Interpol says, well, you didn't commit any crimes. This is a non-extradition country. You could have just came in here and told us 5 years ago that you didn't want to go home and you're free to live here. I'm like, well, now you tell me. So they're like, well, do you know anybody here? I said, well, yeah, I'm friends with this member of the royal family, members with this person, that person, that person. They're like, all right, we're just going to release you. And the U.S. government has 10 days to pick you up. And if they don't pick you up, then you can live here for free. They never came to pick me up. So now I'm back on social media and saying, these idiots fucked this up. I said, here I am saying I'm in custody. I surrendered finally. They had time to pick me up. They don't pick me up. So time goes by. It's like a week or so. And the Interpol calls me and says, you don't have to come in. But if you want, they said they want to pick you up tomorrow. So can you come in and do your paperwork? So I go in to sign my paperwork and to come home. And the deal was that I come home, no handcuffs, no shackles. They had no FBI badges because I knew a lot of people in that government. They requested that I come home on a Emirati jet. I come home with in my own clothes. And they didn't want to agree to that, but they finally agreed to that. So they said they were going to pick me up the next day. So Interpol's like, you have to put you in custody now. And they put me in a Abu Dhabi prison in the middle of the desert. And I was supposed to only be 24 hours. They never came. A week later, they come. Now, this is a prison that literally has a hole in the ground where you take a shit. It's mold all in the walls. There's a hole in the wall that water drips out of. That's where you take a shower. They don't give you toilet paper. They don't give you a bar of soap. They open up the doors three times a day, and they send in these metal containers, and they push them in there, and there's lentil in there, and they throw in bags of bread. These people haven't washed their hands after they just wiped their ass, and now they're dipping it in this food, and it is, and then there's cats and rats, everything's just roaming around. It is like, it is hell on earth. And I was there for a week, and finally they picked me up, and I got to the airport. They let me shower at the airport. I get on a plane. I land here at JFK Airport, and they take me to Newark Jail and Essex County Jail. And the next day, I go in front of a judge, and the judge says, no bail, bail denied, putting you in custody. At that point, I had no money, no lawyers. So a public defender comes to me before I go see the judge, and she goes, the prosecutor said he's willing to offer you a 10-year deal. So you don't even know my case, and you're just going to give me a 10-year deal like it's candy? I said, no, I'm not taking this. I said, I'm not taking this deal. I don't even know who you are. She's like, well, I'm going to just do your hearing today. So I go to jail. No bail. This is where COVID happens. So everything's shut down. So family members can't visit you. The lawyers can't visit you. I'm in there for a few months. And my friends from Abu Dhabi, they ended up paying for my lawyers. So we hired a new lawyer. And after we hired him, they came to my lawyer and said, we'll make him a deal. He pleads guilty to one count. We'll dismiss all the other indictments. I had to plead guilty to one count that I didn't provide the bank a title for one car for $156,000. And at this point, the bank had already told them it's not a $1.6 million, it's $800,000 is what he owes us, which is exactly what I said from day one. Turns out the guy that screwed me on everything was a government informant. When he got arrested years ago, he turned on everybody and he never went to prison. If they would have went after him 6 years ago, when everything happened with me, their cases would have fallen apart because he testified on everybody. How can he be credible witness if he's now out there committing fraud? So I go, I plead guilty. I didn't want to plead guilty. When you plead guilty, they make you stand there and say, you did this, this, and this. And the deal that I pled guilty to, I wasn't even in town when that deal happened, right? I was in Vegas. I have proof of that. But the lawyer tells you, he goes, you're going to have to read this. He goes, if you don't read this exact, they don't accept your plea deal. And if you take a plea deal, you forfeit your right to ever appeal. You literally just said, I did this. I have to do this. So it took everything in me to do this. But my lawyer's like, just make it go away. Because at this point, I was supposed to get time served. So I get done. I plead guilty. They release me the next day. I'm supposed to get sentenced in December. This is now September 9th. And they never sentenced me. The prosecutor was pissed that I was going to end up walking instead of after only serving 8 months in jail. The government delayed my case for 32 months. They put me on an ankle monitor where I wasn't even allowed to leave my house. Now, the big house is gone. I'm living in an apartment that's about 750 square foot at this point with my two daughters and my wife and our pets on an ankle monitor. I can't even go to the mailbox. So now my lawyers are going back and forth every month saying, look, you got to give the guy permission. You got to let him go to his kid's school. You got to do this. You got to do that. Nope, 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 nope. They wouldn't let me work. So we're living in a shitty little apartment and it's during COVID era. So I go and said, you know what? I want to rescue animals. I want to rescue horses. I want permission to go out to the farm. So the judge gives me permission. The next day, there's a press release by the federal government. The guy that used to drive around in Rolls Royces and Lamborghinis is now shoveling horse shit. I'm like, you just humanized me. But okay, if that makes you feel good, you think that you're embarrassing me. 32 months later, I go to court in front of a judge, and a judge, oh, before I go to that point. So when I came home and after I was released on bail, my lawyer shows me all the victims list. And I look in there and I said, how the hell am I a victim? Right? Then I look, how the hell is my dad a victim? How's my uncle a victim? What they did was everybody that bought a car from me in the last, you know, like 90 days of my business or 120 days of my business was listed as a potential victim. And then they sent them letters and said, you could be a potential victim. Are you? Well, guess what? Most people are like, yeah, this is a great idea. I can say I'm a victim. I get a police report, FBI report. I go to my insurance company and I get paid. Or I could write it off as a loss. So I said, so my lawyer walks into court and he goes, Your Honor, my client did not walk into an FBI office and said, I screwed myself. Either did his dad, either did his uncle. And half these people that are on here, they're not victims, but they're listed as victims. So like all of a sudden, the numbers of victims are coming down. I go in front of a judge and there's a guy that gets up on the stand. He's a potential victim. And he says, I gave my car to Bobby. He owes me $100,000 for a car that I gave him to sell. And he never paid me a dime. So my lawyer gets up and he says, what kind of car was it? And he tells him it's a 2000 and such and Bentley. And he says, is this your handwriting? Yes. Is this your signature? Yes. He goes, your car was a 2005. Your car was worth $50,000. He goes, is this your bank account? Yeah. He goes, did you receive a wire transfer for this much? He goes, so my client only owed you $10,000, not $100,000 like you claimed. You said for the last 10 years that you never received a penny from my client, but you received wire transfers. You never acknowledged it. You said your car was newer than what it was, but it wasn't. It was a 2005. And my lawyer says, he goes, Your Honor, just like this guy, there's so many people there that said that, you know, they were screwed by him. And so we can prove like one by one. Now, there's legitimate money owed to the bank. We owe that money. He owes the bank 100% of the money. And anybody else that was owed was basically, you shut the business off. Every business owes money to people, right? The business got shut down. Everything's frozen. I can't pay. Like, for example, the FBI listed my landlord as a victim. Said, not paying your rent is not a federal offense. That's just defaulting on your rent. But you tossed it in there for $600,000 and said, he owes another $600,000. When we looked at it, I'm like, that's rent for 5 years. I broke the lease. So that's it. He can sue me in a civil court, but that's not a federal offense. So they padded everything. So a judge looks at me and he says, you haven't been taught a lesson. I'm going to send you to prison for 24 months. I haven't been taught a lesson. I lost my business. I lost every last penny that I ever made. I lost my reputation. For 10 years, I'm now fighting the government. And I haven't been taught a lesson yet. I need to humble you, this guy says to me, right? And you know how they always tell you, you can stand up and you can say a few words and beg for forgiveness in front of a judge. Maybe the judge goes lenient on you. The judge tells me to stand up and he sentences me. And the prosecutor jumps up and he says, no, Your Honor, you have to let him say a few words. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, say a few words. I'm like, and I looked at my lawyer, I said, see, the cocksucker's already made up his mind. It doesn't matter if I stand up here and say anything, because I never wanted to say anything in front of the judge. So I just read a statement that my lawyer had prepared. I read it and I said, I knew at this point, this justice system sucks. And I got sentenced to prison. I got a letter in the mail a week later that says, in order to go to prison, you got to get vaccinated. If you don't get vaccinated, they're going to send me to a higher security prison. I'm supposed to go to a camp. 24 months constitutes a camp. I didn't want to get vaccinated. Well, they forced me to get vaccinated. Now, I owed the bank $800,000, but I pled guilty to $156,000 at my restitution hearing. Now, normally when you read the news, let's just say somebody stole $1 million. They usually pay back $100,000. That's what their restitution is. It's usually like a tenth of it, right? My indictment was $800,000. I pled to $156,000. The judge awarded $3.3 million in restitution. Doesn't happen ever. Doesn't ever happen like that. But it happened to me. So I'm like, hold on. I owe $3 million to who? Oh, all these potential victims. Half of them I don't even know. I owe this money to. How does everybody else get a tenth, but I get more than what my crime was? I go to prison. They lost my paperwork. I'm supposed to get out because I had already done 8 months in jail. So I'm only supposed to do 4 more months because 24 months, I do 50%, and then I have to do the rest in the halfway house. When I get to jail, they lost my paperwork, and they kept me there for 4 additional months. So they kept me there for 16 months. So 8 months in there, 8 months in jail. I get released, and they send me to a halfway house. After the halfway house, they put me on an ankle monitor again. So when it was all said and done, I almost ended up doing 90% of my prison sentence when everybody else does 50. I did 90. And that was, I walked out of prison December 13th, 2023. And the moment I landed in Las Vegas, I looked at my wife and I said, now I'm going to fight back. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to fight back. Because I said, this system is fucking fraud. I said, 80 million Americans in this country, which is 1/5 of our population, has a criminal record. I said, when the president of the United States has a criminal record, there's a problem with this system. And I said, there's people out there that kill people and they don't get this kind of stuff. And I said, I lost 10 years of my life and everything I worked for. So I had to rebuild my life. I left prison with $25. I was a guy that used to drive around in the backseat of a Rolls Royce. Lost everything I ever had. And that experience teaches you a lot. It humbled you. In the next year, I just met a lot of people. And the conversation, one day, Marjorie Taylor Greene was in town, you know, the congresswoman. Mm-hmm. And I sit down with her. We spent the day together. And she said, Bobby, your story's crazy. She goes, you know, you should come up to Washington, D.C. one day. I said, all right, I'd love that, right? And one thing led to the next. And my wife says, she goes, why don't you run for office? Because I was looking for a politician that I could support because I just wanted somebody. I figured if anybody, Trump's running for reelection, Trump's the one that's going to actually be able to reform this justice system, fix this system, right? So I start going to events and stuff. And one thing led to the next. And I ended up announcing that I'm going to run for Congress. And when I announced that I was going to run for Congress, the chairman of the Republican Party said, he goes, I back you. He goes, I love your story. He goes, I would like that you're honest about it. I never hit anything. If you see my campaign video starts with prison bars. And I say, I'm a convicted felon. I said, I was the FBI's most wanted fugitive. And then I talk about my agenda. And I brought a common sense agenda. And people in politics at that point looked at me and they laughed. From the governor down, everybody laughed at me. It's like, this guy, he's a joke. Well, they're not laughing anymore. I am the most watched person in our state at the moment. 30 million hits a month online on Instagram alone. I just started my thing a year ago. My events are packed. I'm filling up more. I'm having a party next week, right? I have 1,000 people coming to the party, which includes celebrities, you name it, all kinds of people. And there's people that are running for office, for governor, to whatever, they can't get 50 people in a room. The people appreciate the fact that I just say it how it is. I don't sugarcoat it. Not Willy fucking Wonka. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. And I brought a common sense agenda that I don't care if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. That's what I'm bringing to the table. So I originally registered as a Republican to run. But I noticed that the Republican Party in our state was kind of flawed. So in our state, Nevada, we have 67% of our voters are independents. So I decided to run as an independent. So I don't have a primary. I'm right on the general. I'm going to be on the ticket in November. And I decided to run. And before you know it, everywhere I go, people are like, I love what you stand for. Everybody's like screaming my slogan, make Vegas, Vegas again. I'm like, one thing leads to the next. And now it's gotten to a point where like everywhere you go, people are like, hey, can I take a selfie with you? Can I take this? I love your story. I love this. I'm like, really? Because like, if you watch my Instagram, I just say it. I don't hide anything. I don't hide my past. I'll drop the F-bomb. I'll do whatever. And people appreciate it. And by doing so, none of my opponents have had one negative ad against me because they don't even know what to do now. They won't debate me. They won't get on a stage with me. If they know I'm going to be at an event, they refuse to show up because they're afraid. They won't talk to people. They put out scripted videos or they put up a scripted post or they'll do that. Me, I walk into a room. I don't care if it's the Shark's Den and I'll just debate anybody. I'll talk to people. I'll walk into colleges. I'll walk into casinos. And all of a sudden, one by one, people are like, that's the guy. And it's started the movement in Vegas now.
Your honesty and your openness is probably something that the world is ready for.
They've never seen it before. They're like, well, hold on. Most people would have 10 people telling them, don't stand that way. Don't say this. Don't do that. I just live my life. And I just do it with a camera on now. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, and what's funny is, if you watch my Instagram page, you're going to see all these beautiful women on there too, right? Every strip club in Las Vegas supports me. You know why? Because I went and I said, I'm going to support everybody. I said, this is Sin City. For far too long, the people that work in this town aren't being, you know, appreciated, or no one's their voice. And I go into this one strip club with my wife and I talk to the girls there. And like, I said, what do you need, right? I go into construction zones. I walk in everywhere. And they're like, you're the first person that's running for office that came and asked us what we want. So they're like, we, through our support. So if you come to one of my parties, you'll see a casino owner, you'll see a business owner, you'll see a construction worker, you'll see strippers, and you'll see everybody. And it's gotten to a point where now there's a song that they created for me that everybody's trying to imitate at my weekly events. They want to do the Bobby walk. And like, for me, I feel like sometimes I'm living a dream, because I was in prison not too long ago. And today I have millions of people watching me, coming out to show support. It is one of the most humbling things you'll ever have to experience. Wherever this takes me, it showed me one thing, that our country is screwed up and people of all types are just tired. They're tired of the system. They're tired of being forgotten. And, you know, like, this is not the country. This is not the America that I was raised in. You know, the America we were raised in, if you worked hard, you can succeed. Today, you can work hard and you still can't succeed. And that's an issue that people have. And people have no faith in their elected officials. And the country's so divided at this point. And it makes us a weaker nation. You know, when we sit here and we beat our chest and we say we're the greatest nation on earth, I'm like, get on a plane and go to China or Dubai or stuff. And they're so far advanced right now. And meanwhile, we're worried about, you know, fighting with each other over stupid political, what Fox News is saying or CNN saying. And I don't bring anything. If you watch what I do, I don't talk about stuff that everybody else is talking about. I talk about stuff that affects your pocket, that affects your family. And I think that's what people love.
How do you think your time behind bars or as a fugitive changed you?
Oh, it changed me 100%. I'm the first person to say it. I was an arrogant prick, because when you start making money—
Is that why the feds didn't like you?
Of course, right? Because when you start making money when you're 18 years old and you're driving around in a Rolls Royce when you're 19 years old and you're like living life and you're hanging out with celebrities. And then, you know, when I beat the government the first time, you just get an air about you, like you're a Teflon, you're untouchable, right? But then you realize when you go through everything I went through, I got to see during that time, I got to see veterans that are struggling. I got to see, like, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're still a young guy. You're still, you know, I guess immature to a lot of issues. And when I went through everything, at that point, I was now a father of three kids. I was a husband, you know, and I felt like I got punched in the gut. And you take stock in everything that you do, and you're like, okay, you know, maybe I took this for granted. Maybe I took that for granted. Now, if I get a chance, I'm going to do something. Now it's not like when you're young, it was all about making money. That's all it was, right? It was like, I want to make as much money as possible so I can have the biggest house, I can have the biggest car, I can have this. I'm at a point in my life now that nothing pisses me off anymore. I don't stress out about money. I don't stress, like, things that I would stress out about, nope, it's my family. I don't give a shit if you told me tomorrow that the creditor is going to be at my front door. I don't give a shit. I really don't get it. Today's my family time. I'm going to spend time with my family, right? And now it's about leaving a legacy. If I could do one thing that could change the lives of a handful of people, I'll say I did something. That's all it is. I want to do that, and I figured I got 6 years I want to do, and after that, I want to just ride off into the sunset with my wife and kids and never be seen again. That's all I want to do. I'm done. I just want to make sure that I can, when I die, I want to make sure my daughters can sit there and say, you know what? Our dad went through all this, but he managed to do this. And that's why, like, if you see my agenda when it comes to justice reform, when it comes to helping the veterans, when it comes to, you know, just everyday things that would affect everyday Americans, it's a common sense agenda that anyone can, when I get to Congress, anyone can get behind, but it would impact so many people. And that's what I'm fighting for.
What kind of things do you want to see happen?
Well, my city's struggling. Vegas is struggling right now.
Cost of living is insane.
Cost of living is expensive. Plus, we, you know, And this goes back decades, right? So when they ran the mob out of town, politicians had a great idea of bringing Wall Street in. Well, Wall Street, anytime they go in someplace, will destroy something. It's like a cancer. It eats away with it, okay? I mean, if you look at anything like Sears Corporation, Kmart Corporation, they are all gone. Wall Street destroyed them, decimated them. Well, Wall Street came into Vegas, and all of a sudden, they started price gouging everybody. Then they sold their land. Then now they're basically nickel and diming themselves out of debt. And by doing so, tourists are not coming. The locals aren't going. People are losing jobs. We have the highest unemployment rate in the country. So I look at it like, how can I started two different campaigns. One's a campaign for Congress, and one's just a personal campaign for Vegas that I'm doing out because I want the town to succeed. So when I said, I want zero taxes on gambling winnings, right? And that means if you win a jackpot, like right now, if you win a jackpot of $10,000, $3,700 gets taken out right away. But if you don't have to pay taxes on that, now you can go gamble some more. You might buy something. You might tip somebody. You know, like when the casinos are gouging everybody on pricing and the waiters aren't making money, the valets aren't making money. Now, okay, you know what? The waiter's going to make some money. The valet's going to make some money. The dealer's going to make some money. I want deregulation because over time, so much regulation has been put in, like the Patriot Act and everything. It's strangling these casinos and they can't compete properly. They can't compete with the online gamings or the overseas gaming companies. So it's like we need some deregulation. We need to give them some breathing room. And then I want to take up the outdated laws like the cash reporting laws. Right now, you walk into a casino with $10,000, your bank or a car dealership, they got to do paperwork. Do you know how much time and money is wasted by businesses by doing that? If I could change that and update that to current inflation rates, you're at $100,000. Because that law was put in the books in 1971. Well, in 1971, you could have bought a house for $10,000 and a car for $3,000. You can't do that today. So let's update it. And you know how much time and money that the casino would save that they could put someplace else? It also saves the gamblers and the everyday individuals, makes their life easy. Then it's like, okay, so that's a shot in the arm for the gaming industry and the local people. And then, like, I want, you know, the veterans in this country are being screwed. We have 366,000 veterans. They don't get proper health care. We expect them to go out there and fight, and they lose their limbs. They go come back with PTSD, and we slap them in the face by giving them VA treatment, which is horrible. You know, 22 veterans a day are committing suicide, 38 veterans by next year, and we can't give them proper health care. But yet we're sending billions of dollars overseas every day. So I want full health care coverage for our veterans. Just like the FBI agent, just like the postal worker, they should be able to walk into any hospital, any day, any doctor, any psychiatrist, anywhere in the country, any time of the day, slam their ID card and get kicked. Instead of the VA kicking them out at Friday at 5 o'clock because they're closing for the weekend, no, they should get the same health care that the Fed gets, or the FBI agent or the senator gets or the congressman gets. And I also want zero taxes for veterans. We've seen, look, our government takes in trillions of dollars in taxes, but they waste it. Well, if we started cutting some of that waste, we can go without the tax revenue from these veterans, but it gives them a fighting chance. They've served our nation. I don't want any more taxes from them. Let them sit there and live their lives because we've taken enough from them. This is our thank you to them, right? I mean, that's what they do in a lot of the other countries. We can do the same here, you know? And I want to focus on our infrastructure. I want to focus on, you know, like there's all kinds of issues in this country that no one's paying attention to, you know, like our healthcare system. Nobody has a plan. So every little thing that I talk about that you'll see on my Instagram page, I am the only person that's running for office that you can sit there and say, Bobby, what's your plan for this? And I'll tell you detail by detail. I actually have a plan, and it's stuff that affects everyday people's lives. So just like that, you know, it's like right now in Nevada, 80% of the land is controlled by the feds. So we're running out of homes. We don't have enough land. By 2030, we're going to run out of land. So how do you expect people to work in casinos, make $50,000, $60,000 a year, but then the homes are $1 million plus because there's no land? It doesn't make sense. Well, why are the feds controlling the land? I want to take the land back from the feds. That is Nevada's bailout from the federal government. We take that land back. Now we can build homes that are $250,000, $300,000. We can build housing for the veterans. We can build all kinds of stuff for the children that we need. You know, and no one's talking about that. Like, we're popping up data centers everywhere. I'm like, well, we have no water. But we're popping up data centers in Nevada all over. They're going to suck up all the water. I said, well, what about all these empty mines? We can use them. Use them if they're underground, some of these places. You got to keep everything cool. Well, the underground, 60 degrees. Put them down there. It takes a little bit more money, but you're not using as much water and everything. And just things that no one's talking about. I've done business all over the world. Not one of my opponents can sit there and talk about tariffs, can talk about business anywhere else, can talk about what's happening in other countries, because they don't know. But my business was, I crisscrossed the world. I mean, I had cars landing in Vietnam. I had cars landing in China. I had to deal with them on a daily basis. So when I go out and talk about something that impacts America, I talk about it because I have a lifetime of experience. And if you watch my videos and I read the comments, I try to simplify everything for people. Unlike politicians that talk down to people, I talk to you. And I break it down as simple as possible. So it doesn't matter if you have a second grade education or you're a Harvard graduate, you're going to understand what I'm saying. And I think that's one of the reasons people resonate with me.
Yeah, it's interesting that an ex-convict,
yeah,
or con man or whatever you want to call it,
yep,
is now running for Congress.
Yep, exactly.
And it almost makes you a more honest politician.
Yep. Those guys make hundreds of millions of dollars on insider information. Those guys break all the laws in the world, but they don't go to prison. But then I go to prison for something, and they call me a felon. I'm like, are you kidding me? You guys are on the Epstein list, and you want to talk about me? At least I can be honest about what I've done.
This idea came from your wife?
Yeah, my wife. That's it.
How long ago?
But now at this point, it's been 2 years now, she told me. About a year and a half ago, she told me. She's like, you should run for office.
Do you feel like this is your calling?
I think someplace in the public is my calling. Because I've learned, even if I didn't think so before, like being in politics, it's disgusting. It's a horrible world. And there's days where I go home and I look at my wife and I'm like, this fucking country is fucked. There's no hope. Like,
I think a lot of us feel that way.
Yeah. And I'm like, the pushback you get when you try to do good, and you're like, I want to go out there and do something good. And this is the pushback you get me, like, because I want to do something good. Like, I had somebody come to me, and he's an elected official, and he says, Bobby, you know, you're going to have to get with the program. I said, what's the program? He goes, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. I said, I don't fucking play that game. He goes, well, then, you know, you're going to have to deal with some problems. I said, well, guess what? I said, I'm expecting all the worst that you can ever imagine. I said, I've been through hell. I said, so you can throw anything you want, maybe. I said, whatever you're thinking about doing to me, I said, I've already thought about it, right? And then another politician comes to me one day. I was out to lunch, and he sees me out, and he goes, you know, you're making a lot of noise. And he said, you know, we're all friends with each other, the cops, the prosecutors, we're all friends with each other. And I looked at him, and I said, okay. I said, so what are you trying to say? He goes, no, nothing. I'm just not saying. I said, by the way, did you buy your girlfriend a gift for her birthday? And he looked at me and he goes, I don't have a girlfriend, I'm married. I said, oh, you sure? And he knew right away I had caught him, because I knew he was screwing this. He was screwing this chick. And at that point, he realized that I'm not the fucking guy that he thought I was. I knew what the landscape was before I jumped in the landscape. I said, I've been to prison. I hung around with some of the worst people in the world. I said, you don't think I thought of every last thing before I entered into the world of politics? I know what you're going to throw at me before you throw it at me. And that's what, a year into this race, not one negative ad has come out about me.
And you think the background that you have, which you're claiming is mostly you were innocent, but there are probably some shady dealings?
Listen, I mean, so look, I'm not going to sit there and say I'm a saint, right? I mean, I dealt with some of the biggest scumbags in the world. If that's the business you're in. Right. And then when you go to prison, you deal with all kinds of people and you deal with them and you get to see everything. So knowing that, and like, you know, I mean, I'm the nicest guy in the world until you piss me off. Then I go ruthless. And I think people see that in politics. They're like, shit. And like when I'm out there campaigning, they've realized that. Like, I don't pull any punches. I just say it how it is. Like, I might wake up one day and just punch the governor in the dick. Because I just decide, hey, you know what? He did a dick move yesterday. And they're like, shit. And this guy's supposed to be on our team. Nope. I'll call a spade a spade. You know, one day I may applaud the president. The next day I might go out there and say, nah, he was wrong. You know, because I'm going to call it how it is. I'm not here to just sit there and play party politics. I'm here to just say, this is wrong or this is right. And me as an independent changes things. You know why? If I was to win and I go into Congress as a freshman Republican or a freshman Democrat, I'm just a freshman. I'm going to be just doing bitch duty by picking up the phone and calling donors. But when I go in there as an independent, now they both want my vote, because at the end of the day, you know, it's margins very tight. Guess what? What committee do you want to sit on? I want to sit on that committee. I want to sit on that committee. When I want to go push an agenda, my vote, because they may need my vote later on. And it changes things.
But what a refreshing candidate you are now.
It is. It's something totally different. And if I win, great. If I don't win, I will find something else to do. I'm sure somebody will come knocking on my door. I'm a very resourceful person, and I'm a hustler. So I'm sure something will happen. I'll be fine.
All right. Bobby Kahn, what an interesting story.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck.
No, thank you very much. It means a lot.
With the election, and we'll see what happens down the road.
Yeah, we'll see. So maybe I'm sitting here next year as a congressman.
I'd love that.
Yep.
That'd be fun.
Thank you for having me here today.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.